it starts the following. It's a very strange parsha in the first place. All right, Korach, with the motto of Aaron, Parshas Korach, was the last thing to happen in the second year that the Israel were in the Midbar. The last thing that we know about. With the whole Matah of Aaron, the Matah of Aaron was placed inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It was taken out and had flowers on it. It was brought out to the Israel to show that Aaron was the leader. Aaron should be the Kohen Gadol. Korach and his henchmen were swallowed up by the ground or burned, whatever it was from what we learned last week. And then there's just a period of 38 years of silence. We have no idea what happens. There's nothing. There's absolutely nothing. All that we have is the beginning of this parsha, Parah Aduma. We talk about Parah Aduma. Yidabar Hashem Moshe V'Aaron Lemor. Zos Kukas HaTorah Shetziv Hashem Lemor Dabro B'nei Yisrael Tzadar V'yichu Elecha Parah Aduma. Shake yourself a red heifer. Then, at the end of the parsha, at the end, when it goes in, it says, Vayavo B'nei Yisrael Parakach, Vayavo B'nei Yisrael Kola Eda, Midbar Tzin B'chodesh HaRishon, in the first month, Vayishavah Ombekadish V'tamash HaMirim V'tugir Hashem. She died. She was buried. That's the 39th year. We're talking a gap of 38 years from the end of Parshas Korach to the beginning of Parshas Chukas, with only Parah Aduma in the middle. So it leads to huge questions. Why? What's that for? Number one, what's with the whole gap? And number two, why fill in the gap with Parah Aduma? What, you couldn't have thought of any other Parsha, anything else that you could have put in? You have to put in Parah Aduma? What does Parah Aduma have to do with anything? Okay, so here's what we have to understand. Number one, the Shem Yishmor. We have to go over Hashem Yishmor. Says, you know, Moshe had an inability to speak. He had a problem, a speech impediment. That speech impediment was not a normal speech impediment. It wasn't a person just with a lisp. It wasn't a person that just couldn't speak because his lip was stuck to his mouth or anything like that. Says the Maharal, his speech impediment was because, how does a person speak in the first place? Why can't animals speak? And don't prove to me from dogs or say, how are you? Or, you know, the parents or anything like that. They don't have the ability to answer based on what you're asking them. They can answer, they can say things, they may have the ability to vocalize certain words, but they don't have the ability to speak. They don't have Dibor like human beings have. They don't have the same type of Dibor. No matter how good they are, they don't have real Dibor. How does Dibor come in? Well, where does Dibor come from? It comes from the connection between the Neshama of a person and his goof. The neshama placed inside the goof makes him speak. By Adam Rishon is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu put the nishmas ruach be'apov. He put the neshama in through his nose and was able to give him some type of a spirit. Then Moshe Rabbeinu was able to speak and clear, I guess the Adam Rishon was able to speak and say what he wanted to say. But let's say your neshama is not connected to your goof. Moshe Rabbeinu's neshama was an unbelievably high neshama. It was a neshama from the highest of the highs. There's no one that can come close to that neshama that Moshe Rabbeinu had. His goof wasn't on that level. So his speech impediment was his inability to connect his neshama to his goof. He couldn't connect the two. He just couldn't put it together. So every time he tried to speak, he didn't know what to say. He was thinking things in his head, but his mouth wouldn't say them. His mouth couldn't connect to what his neshama wanted to say. That's an unbelievable shot from the Maharal. That it's not sound just a speech impediment where he just had a lisp or he had something wrong. It was a real problem. It was a real issue that he wasn't able to do anything with. He wasn't able to do anything. So what would you think? He got the Torah, so therefore what would happen? Got the Torah, you think what? Well, even more so, right? Because Neshama wants even higher. There's no way for him to be able to speak. There's no way he's going to be any better. Shock, but he did. He was able to speak to the people. What happened? Because his goof was raised up. Very good. His goof was raised up to be like his Neshama. And as soon as his goof was raised up to be on the level of his Neshama, to be on the same level as his Neshama, he was able to make himself so holy that now he was able to speak on the level that his Neshama was at. How do we know that? Because he spent 40 days in Shemayim. During those 40 days, I didn't eat, I didn't drink. His goof became on the level of what was like a spiritual being. It was just like a neshama. When he got to that point, now he was able to speak because his goof was properly connected to his ruach. Says the Shem Yishmor, that is the 50th level of Kiddusha. We all say that Moshe Rabbeinu was not supposed to be on the 50th level. That he's a little bit off from being on the 50th level. He was on the 49th. Says the Shem Yishmor, that's before Matan Torah. He was on the 49th level. After Matan Torah, he was on the 50th level. That level is when your goof and neshama are purely equal. When your goof and neshama, you can't tell the difference. The guy is so spiritual, his body acts spiritual. His neshama isn't affected by the gashmias of this world. That was Moshe Rabbeinu after Har Sinai. He was the only person to do so. And because he was only the only person to do so, only he can understand the concept of death and what happens to your neshama after it leaves your body. Nobody else can understand that. We're too gashmi. We understand this world. When you see a person die, you cry. And I didn't mean to rhyme that, but it works well. You start crying. You sit on the ground. You say, what happened? We can't understand it. You think he's gone. He's done. There's nothing else left. You get upset. But why? He's in a spiritual world. There's no good. Gashmi is throwing him down. He has no good. You say, he's in a perfect world, isn't he? I mean, that should be perfect. What else could you ask for? That's not how we look at it. Because we see the world as is. When the guy is gone, the guy is gone. He's gone. There's nothing we can do about him. The point behind Moshe Rabbeinu and what he was able to figure out is that death is just a corridor. And it's not like us saying it, like, oh yeah, I can say it also, that yeah, death is just another step and then we're going to be in Olam Haba and everything. I don't say to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, I want to die. When somebody dies, I don't sit there and be like, terrific for that guy. I don't say that. It would be strange if I would. Nobody does that. I was in a fight on Pesach night, Seder night, with my whole family. I think there was one person on my side, with everybody, about whether or not it was good that we were in Mitzrayim. Whether it was good or we were in Mitzrayim. Now, Abadah, we say it's great that we were in Mitzrayim. It causes a tikkun poor mice. It was horrible. Children died. All these kids died. You mean to tell me that it was all good, that you can come out of that and you could say it was all great? It's almost impossible. Don't be such a braggart and think that you can do so. That I can just think to myself, yeah, it was all good. Everything was good. Because that means that when someone close to you dies, you'll sit there and say, I know it's all good. And you won't have any feelings. There's no crying. There's no getting upset. No nothing. Because you know it's all for the best. You strive for that. You strive for it. But to get there, that takes a lot. That takes a tzaddik. That takes a gubble. To really be there is Moshe Rabbeinu on the 50th level. And no one has ever gotten there like Moshe Rabbeinu. So who understood Paraduma? Who understood the concept of taking the ashes of a Paraduma, taking this red heifer, burning it in the fire, taking the ashes, mixing it with holy water, and then sprinkling it on the guy, and all of a sudden making the guy taller? Who in the world understands that? Only Moshe Rabbeinu. No one else can understand it. Shlomo HaMelech could come up there, but in Chokhmah, you can't get it. If you want to use your wisdom, you can't get it. Amarti ech kamav yirachokim imini. I thought it was smart, said Shlomo HaMelech. But it's too far away from me. I can't understand something like this. It's just too far. There's nothing I can do about this. Moshe Rabbeinu, even then, could not get to it until he had grown so spiritually high that he couldn't be brought down. And he had to be on that 50th level. He was growing all his years of his life. The greatest that he ever was in the 40th year of the Midbar. He's 120th year. During that year, he's able to get things that he had never gotten before. He'd been learning Torah for 40 years. Pirkei Avos says that at the age of 40, you start to understand what your Rebbe originally meant. And Moshe Rabbeinu got to that level, understood what a Kadosh Baruch Hu meant when he learned it from him directly. And at this point, he's able to say to himself, wow, now I get it. So there's a partial reason why Paradum was in between the second and the 40th year. Because the only thing that was happening, aside from them learning, was people dying and people being buried. All those 600,000 Jews who died from the Meraglim until now have to be buried. Whether they buried themselves at the end of Gemara Tainis or whether there was somebody else. But regardless, they had to learn Tumas Meis. So that Tumas Meis was what was being learned. Who understood that concept? Who understood what that meant and what Paraduma does? That was Moshe Rabbeinu. When? In the 40th year. And we specifically put Parshas Paraduma here, even though we technically learned it in Mara, before Har Sinai, we learned Paraduma. It was put here on purpose to show his state in Ruchnius, that at this point he was able to understand it unlike anybody else, and there is no one that will ever understand it until the times of Mashiach, aside from Moshe Rabbeinu. No one like that. Rav Schwab says, that's shot behind the Paraduma. We know the Paraduma is supposed to be a kapar for the Egel Azov. Although in the first Rashi, Rashi says that if the nations of the world come up to you and say, what's with the red heifer? You're supposed to say to them, it's a chok. It's a law that we don't understand. We know the basic concept behind it is it's supposed to atone for us for what happened with the Egel Azov. There was a golden calf. We have to have a kapara for that. So tavo emate kanach es soas bina. The mother will come and wipe up the doo-doo that her child had. That's unbelievable, no? I said that nicely.
Yes, very nicely.
That's unbelievable, right? What does that mean? The mother should come and wipe it up. What does that mean? What is this, a diaper? That's what Egel Azov was? Egel Azov was just a diaper taking away? No. Think. That's what you gotta do here. You gotta think. What does it mean that a mother is coming to wipe up the child? Yeah.
I think that the reason Egel Azov is the person that burned the ashes from the and they're doing something else. And they're giving up their purity for somebody else.
Yeah, but that doesn't explain anything to do with a red heifer or anything like that.
That's
what the parents do. You're 100% right. That's what parents do. But what's the shot behind this? Why do we have to do this? Because if a person goes and looks at it, we're trying to find a red heifer, right? Something that's purely red. Red happens to be the color of Midas Adin. It represents Midas Adin in this world, blood in this world. We have no ability to understand that we have a nefesh. You can't figure out that you have a nefesh, that you have a soul. You know you have it, but it's not there for you to touch. You can't feel it. You can't really. And even if you say, "Oh, I feel my ruchnius, I feel my spirituality," if you're a monk, maybe you can get. I have no idea how you can get up there. Oh, it's not feeling what you have. It's feeling what you can get. Again, the same thing that we said up above. A person can try to bring himself to the point, but when it boils down to it, if a person comes up to you and says, "Do you feel your neshama?" You can't really say yes. You might convince yourself that you felt it, but you can't really feel. There's no physical way for you to do it.
Believe that you're possible. It's possible to feel it, because otherwise there's no point in doing anything in this world.
Without a question. But that doesn't mean you actually felt it. Again, I'm going with two different levels. We're not dealing with a person who has gotten to the point where he has really spiritually grown, raised himself to a level where he can really feel it. Dealing with a person that's still growing. And when a person is still growing, that type of a person is sitting there and he looks at this world and he sees it as something that is tangible. And your neshama is not tangible. I can't feel it. I can't think that it's really there. I should say I'm using it in two different terms. Feel as in feel it, and feel as in spiritually understand that it's there. You understand that it's there, and you realize there's something beyond this world. It's not just a table. There's something beyond the table. But you don't feel the thing behind the table. You don't really realize that there's something behind the table. Gashmius seems to be the ikker. Ruchnius seems to be the tuffel. That's Midas Adin. Midas Achesed would allow us to be able to see things behind the curtains. We don't. We only see things as they are. Ruchnius, all our spirituality, is tuffel. It's secondary to what we see inside this world. It's unfortunate, but that's Yitzhahara's job. That's what he does. He gives that to us, and he says, it's the root of all Avodah Zarah. There is a God, but it's this water bottle. Bow down to it. The God is within the water bottle. He represents himself by this statue. He represents himself by this cross. He represents himself by some other thing, whatever it is. And that thing you have to bow down to, you have to look at, you have to think that this is the ikker. Because we can't picture something that's ruchnius. We can't picture something that's ruchnius. It's the root behind all of Avodah Zarah. When they did the Egel Azov, what they were saying to themselves, and the wording that they said, "Ki zeh Moshe Ish, lo yadana mehayilo," this man Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't know what happened to him. They didn't have to add on that word Ha'ish. But they said to themselves, we can't picture what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu. We don't know what it's like to die. This man, Moshe Rabbeinu, they specifically said he's physical, he's Gashmi. And they said, we need something else that's Gashmi that we can picture, that can bring us to Ruchnius and say, oh, there's our spirituality. There's our soul. That's what we're supposed to do. This is our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where is that thing? And they chose the Egel Azov. That's what the Egel Azov represented. Gold, because it's the greatest of all metals and whatever it is. It's the strongest of all metals. I realize crystal and everything. But it's a strong, beautiful thing that shows everything that you have. It's a golden calf. So what do you need? You take that Midas Adin, you take that Gashmias, and you burn it. You turn it into ashes, and you say, the Gashmias in this world means nothing. Means nothing. At the end of the day, it's just dust and ashes. Just offer the Afer, as Avraham Avinu said. That's all it is in this world, and there's nothing different. You mix it with pure water. Pure water that doesn't have any real substance, that can fit into anything that you mold it into. Sort of like this chalon. It just fits into whatever you pour it into, in a plate, into a bowl, into a cup. Wherever you want to put it, it works. It just works. That's the Tahara. To sit there and to realize that our lives, as we see it, are not the Iker. It seems that way. It looks that way. It looks like that what I'm doing right now and what I physically do is the most important thing in the world. And because of that, I gotta have fun. I gotta make sure that I'm doing, doing something that I enjoy. And if I don't enjoy it, then it's not worth doing. That's what we think. That's what Tahara makes us feel. That's not what's true. It's for us to sit there and to say to ourselves, so what does the aim do? The mother refers to the whole spectrum. The mother of all evils, so to speak. The whole spectrum of what it is, and it takes away its tolada, because Gashmias, which is the aim, the mother, the red heifer, which is Midas Adin in this world, is trying to take care of what its child, its offspring, Avodah Zara, which is taking the Ruchnias and bottling it up and saying, here it is for you, this is your God, this is how you're going to use it. It's taking that and putting it down. It wipes off all that dirtiness, all that gashmias, all the dirtiness that comes out from what you think if you're that way. And that's what it means by wiping up what it's trying to do. What comes right after that? Right after the Paraduma? Miriam's death.
But what is that? I'm sorry. What is that? But meaning that it sounds like it's talking about that wipes clean, like for those like bad thoughts that we have. That has nothing to do with. That has nothing to do with. The Paraduma is kapara for Tumas Mace. It's not for 100% thought about.
Again, what is Misa? Death is, and we're not done with this whole board yet. Misa is the lack of gashmias, or pure gashmias. You lost your neshama. That level of where death comes in, which the Paraduma is trying to take care of, is only able to be understood when you burn down the gashmias and say there's no gashmias left. It's just ashes. That's when you can understand, you know what, the gashmias in this world doesn't mean anything. It won't bring you to the level of Moshe Rabbeinu where you can look at death and say it was a good thing for that person. It won't bring you to that. But it'll be able to let you understand that when somebody passes away, sometimes it's for the best. Sometimes I don't understand it fully, but I'm sure it was for the best. It can lead you to start saying that when you start knocking down your gashmias like that. Look at the next piece. Miriam dies. Says Rashi, why is Parshas Miriam put next to Parshas Paraduma? Anybody remember the Rashi?
Well, you just said the answer.
But that's why I put it third. So you'd be able to get it. But what does Rashi say? Rashi says, just like the Paraduma is Mechaper, it atones for something, so too Misav Tzadikim is Mechaper. What's the shot behind that? The idea behind it is very obvious, as you just said. Para is a chok. The whole Paraduma idea has absolutely no reason that we can really understand. We may have thoughts and start thinking to ourselves, why do I need to do this? If I don't understand it, why should I do it? Why should I do it? It's not a mitzvah I can understand. It's not a mitzvah that I can even fathom. So why should I bother doing it? It doesn't mean anything to me. It's not going to help me. It's not going to do anything for me. Tzitzis, I can somewhat understand, to remind us of the mitzvahs. Tefillin, I guess I can understand, to crown ourselves with the greatness of God. I can understand those things a little bit. But Paraduma, I can't understand it all. So why would I have to do it? When a person says, it's a chok b'litam, it's something that is an automatic law, it has no reason, but God told me to do it, and I'm doing it because God told me to do it, that right there is understanding. We can't always understand everything. Our gashmias doesn't allow us to get everything down. We're forgetting that there's a ruchni side to us. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu realizes that. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us certain mitzvahs to improve our ruchnias. We don't get that. We don't understand it. But if we say to ourselves, I'm going to do it anyway because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me to do it. I am doing it because God said do this. That automatically brings you up to a level of greatness beyond anything that you can really get in this world. Mises Tzadikim is the same way. You notice that by Mises Tzadikim. A Tzadik! Why did that Tzadik die? What did he do wrong? Or what did she do wrong? What did Miriam do wrong? Give us one chait. Lashon Hara? She was already punished for that. She got saras for 7 days. She's done. That's not a chait. Why did she die? Why did she get to go to Eretz Yisrael? What did Miriam do to not deserve to go to Eretz Yisrael? Aaron and Moshe was from this week's Parsha. They hit the rock. What did Miriam do? What did Miriam do? When a person asks that question, he starts having doubts. Maybe a Kadosh Baruch Hu kills you for no reason at all. Maybe a Kadosh Baruch Hu is doing things I just don't understand. So why should I care what God does? The key is to say to yourself, sometimes I don't know. I just don't get it. These things happen. When a little child passes away, and the Gemara in Shabbos compares Misa of Tzadikim to Misa of children. When a little child passes away and you say, what did the kid do? He was 1 year old. He was 2 years old. What could he have possibly done? You can't ask why. It's natural to do so. And it's going to go inside your head. The way to be mechaper for that thought, the way to atone for that thought is to say to yourself over and over and over again, Hashem has a plan. Hashem has something behind all this. I may not get it. Hopefully I'll be able to see little inklings of what the solution is. But I don't always get it. That's the idea behind it. And when done correctly, can do unbelievable things to this world. If you start thinking that way, you can do unbelievable things. Now, famous Machlokas Rashi and Rambam about what was the chait of Moshe Rabbeinu when he hit the rock. What was the chait? Rashi says it was because he actually hit the rock. Why did he hit the rock? He should have spoken to the rock. You should know, by the way, there's a rush. It says v'dibartem alafela. The word dabor also means to hit. It brings two rayas, one from Yeshaya, one from Yechezkel, and in both places, it means the word hit. So technically, v'dibartem alafela could have mean hit the rock. That might not have been the chait. But according to Rashi, it said he hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. How could he have hit the rock? That's Rashi. The Rambam says it's because he got angry. He got angry. He started yelling at the people. I mean, Asela Azen no tzilachayim. I am Shimu no Amorim, he said. Listen, O rebellious people. I mean, Asela Azen no tzilachayim. Am I going to take water out of this fight? He got angry at the people. And because he got angry, he ended up doing something wrong. He hit the rock instead, or whatever it was. Says the Kedusha Slaver of Livius and Berdichev, they're both the same answer. It's the exact same thing. What's the connection? What does Rashi mean? What does the Rambam mean? It means the following. There's two ways to give Musar. One way to give Musar, which is the usual way that people go about it, is scream at the guy and say, you're a Rasha. You did something wrong. What's wrong with you? Get out of here. That's one way of giving Musar. Sometimes it's effective. It depends on how good you are. It depends. Like if I call somebody and say, what? How respected you are. Right. When I would write to Benji and say, you're a loser for not showing up, you never would. That's why I'm using you instead of somebody else. But if I would go ahead and I would write, Benji, you're a loser. So he could take that in one of two different ways. He could say, like, well, forget it then. I'm never going to show up. Or he could say to himself, listen, he meant it for my best, for, you know, the best for me. It may not have been the way that I would have gone about doing things, but life, he was trying to do it for the best thing for me. And okay, I'll accept the mussar. I'll come next time. That's number one. That's one way. Not as effective as way number two. Way number two, says Kedushas Levi, is to say, you're such a holy yid. You have such a holy neshama. The neshama comes from the Kisya cover. How could you do such a thing? Don't you realize how great you are? Don't you realize how big of a tzaddik you are? Your mom is a holy person. And you did this? How could you have done this? Right there, that line, can be unbelievably effective on people. Because people start saying to themselves, he's right. I am holy. He's right. I do have a neshama that comes from the Kisya cover. Why am I doing this? This doesn't make any sense. I can't control myself. I can't stop myself from eating that candy. I can't stop myself for 1 second from taking that little candy on the table. It's ridiculous. What's wrong with me? If a person does it correctly, not only is it effective, it can be used in every situation in the best way. You tell a kid, you're holy. You're holy. You're not what you think. You're not a piece of garbage. You're something. You are an unbelievable person in God's world. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs you to do something good. He wants you to do something good. It works unbelievably well. When that happens, HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens as well. And he hears it and he says, oh, he's a holy person. Because the tzaddik who's giving the mussar is ki'ilu giving a psak in Shemayim. That guy is holy. And that psak goes up to Shemayim and it tells the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that man is holy. He's a holy person. Yanko, he's a holy yid. Unbelievably Kadosh yid. You've never seen such a holy person in your life. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, oh, he's a holy person. And not only does it do that, the whole world was created for such a person. Such a holy yid, the whole world was created for such a person. That means that animate or inanimate objects should do the will of that person. If that person wants a table to walk, the table was created for him. He can make the table walk. If that person needs something from a certain tree, a bird will come by, grab it out of the tree, and bring it down for that person. Because if the whole world was created for him, why not? Everything was created for him. That rock, that tree, that sidewalk, it was all created for him. So it could become a moving walkway, which would be unbelievable. You think it's so hard to make a magic carpet? To make yourself fly? I mean, I should say, it's very hard. I keep trying every night. This is not working. But the fact is, if you know how to live your life, if you're a tzaddik and you know, and everybody here has the ability to become that tzaddik, you were born as a Jew, and even non-Jews have this ability to become tzaddikim in certain ways, not as easy as we have it. But they still have the ability to become a tzaddik. If the world was created for you, the world was created for you, then anything in the world can go. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu is the following. You want to make water come from the rock? All you have to do is ask the rock. You don't have to do anything else. Because if the world was created for such people, then great. The rock will give out water. It's impossible, but the rock will do whatever it can in order to give out water for you because that's what it's created for. It wasn't created for anything else. But Moshe Rabbeinu got angry. He saw that the people weren't listening. He saw that the people thought it was a natural way. They're like, oh, you know how to get water out of rocks, right? I've seen rocks that take water out of rocks. I've seen it. You must be, it's because we're your shepherd years, Moshe Rabbeinu, when you were a shepherd for that guy. That must be the way it's working. I understand. That's the way it goes. And Moshe Rabbeinu looked at him and said, Shimon Amorim, listen, you rebellious people. Haminasela Zenotum Lechamayim, you think I'm going to take it out of any rock? I'm going to take it out from a special rock. The one that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appointed. The one that was made for this world. This rock over here. But he yelled at them. And he gave them Moser not in the way of, you guys are such holy yidden, you know that I can't bring it. I'm not doing this natural. I'm doing it supernaturally. When he did that to them and said it to them in that way, he could no longer just speak to the rock and let something come out. Now he had to hit it. He had to force the water to come out of that rock. Now he has to take the matzah and hit the rock. He's done this before. It happened in Parshas Bishalach. But now he has to do it again. He no longer has that. And that's why Kodesh Baruch Hu looks at him and says, Yahan ki loach disheni, you weren't matzish me. You could have made a huge Kiddush Hashem by giving him Musar in the right way and saying the world was created for you. And if the world is created for you, then everything can do whatever you want. Any object can do whatever you want. If you would have said that to them and they would have listened, you wouldn't believe what you could have come out with. You wouldn't believe what kind of a Kiddush Hashem. Then, when he went inside Eretz Yisrael, every single animal and every single stone would have spat at the Kenanim and kicked out all the Kenanim. You would have walked in, you would have built up a Beis HaMikdash, and the whole, everything would have happened. But because you did that, the world now has to be forced. You're going to have to fight a war. And you, Moshe Rabbeinu, are not a man to start wars. So you can't go to Eretz Yisrael. You're not the man. Aaron HaKohen, we're not going to go into it. That's a different story altogether. Aaron's Kleit was another issue altogether of how he lived his life in Shalom. But sometimes you got to stand up and say, no, you're wrong. And Aaron didn't have the ability to do that, at least at this point, to Moshe Rabbeinu, and that was his Kleit. But that's for another time, that's for something else. So now, let's get into Bala. Sefer HaRadim. I found this Sefer last year when I was in Eretz Yisrael. And I just took a look at it over the past couple of parshios. The Sefer HaRadim lived at the times of the Arizal in Tzfas. He was a shamish in one of the shoals. Nobody knew who he was. So one time in Miron, they all went to Miron on Lag BaOmer for Shem Bayochai's Hilula. And when they went there, they saw a very tall man dancing with this shamish. The Arizal called the tall man into the middle of the circle, and they started dancing together. And then afterward, he called, after the tall man left, then he called the shamish, and he started dancing in the middle. So afterward, all the Talmidim said to the Arizal, Revi, we don't understand. You know, the tall man, we don't know. Maybe he was a special person, but the shamish? This guy's an Amaretz. This guy's a pure Amaretz. He said, do you know who that tall man was that was dancing with the shamish? They said, who? He said, it was Rav Shimon bar Yochai. By the way, that's how we know what Rav Shimon bar Yochai looks like, for those Rebbe cards and those pictures that they have. I'm serious. The tzura of Rav Shimon bar Yochai comes from the Arizal in Miron on Lag BaOmer. He was only there for one Lag BaOmer. From that Lag BaOmer, when he saw Rav Shimon bar Yochai and the Talmidim saw him, they drew the picture and they have that picture. That's where it comes from. It's the Mesora behind that picture. But the Arizal said that was Rav Shimon bar Yochai. So the person who he's dancing with is probably a special person. So they tested the guy, they found the guy, and finally revealed himself that he had written a Sefer, the Sefer HaRadim, an unbelievable work of Musar. And then he started saying Divrei Torah, and people realized, it's not a Pashat Yid. I mean, in Tzfas, you don't expect anything. You know, it's usually the guy in the mikvah who's there for 750,000 dips. You know, that guy is like the holiest Yid in the world. I thought he was just a prune. I had absolutely no idea. You never expect anything when you go there. By Yar Balak Ben Tzipor, it's Kolesh Rossi Yisrael Amor. Every is my famous one with Balak with the Tzipor. We're not going to go into that this year, unfortunately. What did Balak see more than anybody else? What did he see? Balak and Tzipor saw his Kol Asher Otzi Yisrael L'Amori. You know what he saw? The Egel Azal. How could Bnei Yisrael do the Egel Azal? Balak saw through his magic, through whatever he had. He saw through his Tzipor. The eagle has dove. He thought it was an eagle, and he said to himself, what in the world were they thinking? How could they have done such a thing? He couldn't understand it. He sat there and he said to himself, there's no way HaKadosh Baruch Hu was with these people. 40 days after he gives them the Torah, 40 days. He goes ahead, and they go ahead and they do an eagle has dove. It can't be. And then he saw the war against the Amori. And in the war against the Amori, you know what the people were doing? They were fighting. They were fighting. Fighting. Why did they have weapons? If God's on your side, you don't have to fight. You just walk in and they fall down dead in front of you. He didn't realize none of the Jews died. He didn't realize that. But all he saw was people fighting. And he said, what's going on here? In the war against the Amalek, they never fought. By Yachlosh Yeshua the Amalek, he weakened them. Whatever that means, they didn't fight naturally. They didn't fight a natural war against Mitzrayim. They didn't fight. All of a sudden they're fighting? What happened? What was it? Oh. The Igla Zov. The Igla Zov must have made God leave them. God is no longer with them. So he sat there, Bayar Balak Ben Sibor's Kolasher Asi Yisrael Le'emori. That the Jews were fighting the Amori. They may have been extremely strong people, but it wasn't God. God's no longer with them. He started thinking to himself, Vayogar Moav, was he was worried. There's so many. They have a Rav. They have a Kadosh Baruch with them. They have a God that's so holy and so great. What are we going to do? There's no way we're going to be able to fight these people. That's what he started saying. Vayogar Moav was so scared. What did Balak do? He went up to them and he told them, the Egel Azov took away their God. They're just really strong. So all of a sudden, what did they become? Vayakutsu. Where's the word? Vayakutsu Am. Of course, I'm not going to find it. Anybody have Parshas Balak as their Bar Mitzvah Parsha? Koranaleh, etc. They also think, oh, Vayomalem. Of course, I'm not going to find it. Nunu, trust me on this one. It's by, oh, it's the end of the passage. Vayakutsu Moav Mipnei Bnei Yisrael. Then they got disgusted. They sat there and they got disgusted. What? Did they go a dog? They had a Kadosh Baruch Hu in their hands and they got rid of them? What were they thinking? They started saying to themselves, well, now that the day goes up, all we have to do is to bring up that chait again. All we have to do is remind them, if they're just so strong, we can curse them. And make God think about that. Make God think about the egos of, and then we'll be able to win. And that's all kilchol kashor, ziyar kasadeh, like an axe licks up the vegetables of the field. They're bringing up the egos of. So they went to Bilam. He said to Bilam, curse them, we have a chance. But Bilam looked at him, and he saw, it's not shot. He saw lo hibit oven biyako, lo ra amo biyisol. Ben Yisrael didn't do it. It was the Erev Rav that did the Egel Azov. The Egel Azov was not the effect of anybody else. I don't think anybody realized how big of a sakana this was. First of all, how do we know about this? How do we know about Balak and Bilam? For all those that are out there, they're telling over the stories of Balak and Bilam. None of Ben Yisrael were there. I mean, they might have seen some people on the mountain, like, standing up there, building these bechos. But they couldn't, but what were they doing? How would anybody have known what happened with Balak and Bilam? Where would they have known about all this? It's purely from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it. Okay, let's get into the famous deal. And this should take us all the way through. Why, in the beginning, Bilam asked, can I go curse them? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no. They come back. They come back, they say, we'll give you kavod, we'll give you anything you want. Bilam says, wait a night, I gotta ask the Kadosh Baruch Hu again. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, if they came to call for you, then you can go with the men. So Bilam goes, then the Kadosh Baruch Hu gets very angry, sends a malach in his path, and says, I can't believe you're going. So Bilam says, okay, if you want, I'll go back. And the malach tells him, no, go, but you're going to say what I want you to say. I don't understand. Did he want him to go or did he not want him to go? I mean, he keeps saying, I want you to go, I don't want you to go, then I want you to go. Then he says, as long as you do what I say. Then I got angry that you're going, but then just keep going. Keep going. Tzvara Shlomo, the Radomsker, says, I'm shot. The Kedushas Levi says the exact same words. Probably it's a board from the Baal Shem Tov, I would assume. But Rav Schwab says the exact same board. That's what made me start thinking, wow, there's something very, very strange about this, because how could Rav Schwab come up with a Hasidic board like this? And then somebody saw something similar to it, and he said it beautifully. If you bless somebody L'Shem Shamayim, no pnius, not for honor, there's no money involved, the guy's not paying you anything. You just go up to the guy and you say, I want to give you a bracha. And the guy's going to think, what a weird guy. He's not going to think like, oh, wow, such a holy yid. He's going to think, why would he want to bless me? That bracha does not stop. It keeps going and going and going. A person who gives a bracha, l'shem shamayim, lishma, for the right reasons, just for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it never stops. It just keeps growing with you and growing with you, and it's an unbelievable, unbelievable level. But if you do it for other reasons, for kavod, or for gaiva, or for money, or for anything else, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I just gave you your reward. Your bracha doesn't have to be fulfilled. You wanted kavod, I'll give you kavod. But I'm not going to let your bracha exist. Maybe your bracha will have a little bit of an effect, but it's not going to have a major effect. You do something lishma, it works. You do something shalo lishma, maybe a little bit, not so much. Let's say you curse lishma. What does cursing lishma mean? You're not doing it for the money. You're not doing it for the honor. You're doing it because you hate them. That's all you're doing it for. If you curse lishma, that curse has unbelievable effects. A Russia in this world is effective and and has tremendous power if he does things lishma. If he does things just because. But if he does it for kavod, he does it for honor, he does it for riches, he does it for something else, my friends, he gets nothing. He'll get the riches. He'll get the kavod. But he's not going to get anything more than that. But if he curses just because I want to curse them, then the person can be cursed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed it in this world that if a person curses or a person blesses lishma, it can override whatever he wants. He allowed it to be in this world, that it can do whatever it wants in this world. That's the way kishuf works. That's the way davening works. It's very, very similar. A bracha is like davening. A curse is like kishuf. It works in the exact same way that a Kadosh Baruch Hu allows it to be. What was he afraid of? When Bilam first went to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, he said, "Can I go curse Bnei Yisrael?" Said a Kadosh Baruch Hu, "No, you can't go because you're going to do it lishma. And if you do it lishma, your curse might actually occur. Your curse might happen because Rishayim in this world can also be matzliach. So I can't let you go. You're not going." But when he came back and he said, "They're offering me cover. They're offering me riches. They're offering me more than I could ever imagine." Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "Oh, in lekrolecha anashim, if the men are here to invite you to come and give you kavod, then you can go. Because that's shelo lishma. You do a shelo lishma, you're not going to make a curse that works. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to give you something and that's going to end up working. You're not going to do anything that actually works." What did he do? He ran ahead. Says Rav Schwab, he ran ahead. Where were the Sari Moav and the Sari Balak? Where were they when the whole thing with the Malach happened and the donkey and everything? It seems like Balak's not, like Bilam's on his own. What happened to everybody else? Vayara Malach ki holechu. Because he went on his own. That he ran ahead. He had such zrizus. He so wanted to curse Bnei Yisrael. He so wanted to do it lishma. He started running ahead of everybody else. Everybody's sitting there and saying, I saw a chazal once that said that Bilam actually started running. And he said, "Stand on my donkey and just catch up to me." He wanted to go so badly. But the point is that he was running ahead. The people behind were chilling out. They're having a nice little walk. They walk their normal way. Bilam is running ahead. He's ahead of everybody else. The Malach came to him and said, "You're doing it lishma. You're not doing it for the kavod. You're not doing it for the money. You're doing it lishma. Stop it." Said Bilam, "I'll turn back." Said the Malach, "No. Go for kavod. Telech im ha'anashim," said the Malach. "Go with the men." And then right after that, he went with the men. He walked with the Sarei Balak. And he had to go with them. Because he had to show that he's doing it for kavod. He's doing it for gaiva. He's doing it for money. And then he was allowed to go. At the end of the day, he can't go against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So he did go for that reason, and he wasn't allowed to do anything. And as we see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed him to say certain things because he was going for that reason. How did that happen? I don't understand. If Russia also has Bechira, then Russia should be able to make that choice. So why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu get involved and say, "No, don't go"? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu send a Malach and say, "No, don't do that"? If he makes that choice, he makes that choice. How did he get involved? When he went out, there's a very strange Russian. Vayachlosh es hachamor. He saddled his donkey. Where was that line used before? By Avraham Avinu, by the Akedah. Said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "Oh, you want to be a Zoriz? You want to be so quick to curse Bnei Yisrael? Kvar kadmucha Avraham Avinu." Avraham Avinu already did this first. Avraham Avinu already came around and he saddled his donkey first, and his power of Kedusha, of being Zoriz and doing something lishma, of doing a mitzvah lishma, because there's no other, Avraham wasn't doing it for kavod, he wasn't doing it for gaiva, he certainly wasn't doing it for money or for children. That wasn't why he was doing it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me to do it. I'm doing it lishma. That lishma is always greater than any lishma for a Rasha. So his lishma was able to negate a little bit the lishma of the Rasha, to which HaKadosh Baruch Hu was allowed to get involved and stop Bilam from doing what he was ready to do. He was allowed to get involved. He couldn't change Bilam's mind. Couldn't change Bilam's mind. But he's allowed to get enough involved to be there and be able to get around there. That's the power of Bechira. He tells you an unbelievable thing. If you're going to do something bad, do it for the money. Do it for the money. Don't do it lishma. Don't do it just because I just want to say, "Here's to you, God. It's matzliach. You won't realize how matzliach you are." And that's what this Satan tries to get you to do, to look at it and try to do it purely, purely lishma. But the wrong lishma. It's such an unbelievable level. That's the reason why Rishayim are matzliach in this world. That answers a tiny little bit what we started off with. What's the deal? The Paraduma, everything, the connection between Gashmias and Ruchnias, how does it work exactly? And the only person to really equate the two was Moshe Rabbeinu. You know what Pshat is? We can't understand everything. But there's little hints in the world. What we have to do is find those hints and look at them and say, wow, that's unbelievable. And this is just a tiny little bit of the Torah that I can get. You see why Rishayim HaMatzliach in this world, because of Lishma, and you see how it's Meramis who hinted to in the Torah itself. You sit there and you say to yourself, that's why Rishayim HaMatzliach in this world. That's why sometimes Tzadikim have it bad in this world. Sometimes it doesn't go, they don't do it fully Lishma. Sometimes there's something else involved, a monetary issue, or a kavod issue, or there's something else involved. That's the reason why. That's the reason why things are happening that way. You start seeing those little hints that can lead you up the levels. Listen, I can't tell you anything. Everybody here is a holy year. Maybe you'll be able to get to the 50th level. I doubt I'm ever going to be able to get to the 50th level. Maybe somebody here can get themselves to that 50th level and fully understand death, and fully understand what's going on. Until then, we just strive for it. We sit and we say, we know there's something beyond this world. It's obvious there's something beyond that we're not seeing. I don't understand it, and that's okay. As long as I can start seeing little bits and pieces and try to understand those. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a good show. Yeah.